If you're on a GLP-1, you're probably loving the results. But how do you feel? All of those side effects can take a toll. So now what? Get to GNC. We'll help with solutions to address those side effects and keep you going on your journey. GNC.
Hey there, Brenda.
It's Carol.
Exactly. So which leg are we operating on?
You mean arm.
It's all connected.
Asking the right question can greatly impact your future.
Are you sure you're an orthopedist?
Actually, I'm a Sagittarius.
Especially when it comes to your finances.
Do you have a question?
Are you a certified financial planner?
Yes, I'm a CFP professional.
CFP professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's gotta be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Prevail, це щотижнева програма про політику.
L'histoire, la sécurité nationale.
Crimine organizzato, dinero sucio.
Globale corruzione. Та боротьбу за демократію.
E ora?
ATP.
E maintenant?
Con ustedes, su anfitrión.
Gregolier.
Welcome back to the fight. This time I know our side will win.
I'm Greg Oliar. This is Prevail. Welcome to the program. We've got a great show. Candidly, Tiff is here. She has a live TikTok show, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Wednesdays, called The Rundown, where she and her co-hosts run down the news of the week. She knows a lot of stuff about what's going on inside the Beltway. She is OG K-Hive, and if you recognize her voice, it's because she's been on the show before. She was on with our friend Joni V many moons ago to discuss the Biden-Harris first 100 days, and I'm like, my God, that was a long time ago. We're now heading into the election season. It's early, but we're going to turn the corner soon. There's lots of talk already, certainly among the GOP people, and with all the Jack Smith stuff with Trump and when this this trial is going to be, and we can't have it be too close to the election. It's on everybody's mind. So I wanted to bring her on and talk about Biden, talk about Kamala, and the jobs they've done so far, and what we can do to show our support and make sure that they win re-election, which, they need to win re-election or we're really screwed. Yeah. So great conversation with her, as always. She's a wealth of information, and she knows a lot of things that I don't know. She really keeps on top of all the Capitol Hill stuff and the bills that are being passed. And, you know, she knows where the VP is all the time. There's a lot of this talk of, where's Kamala? We never see her. If you don't see Kamala, it's because you're not looking for her, because she's out doing stuff pretty much all the time. And Tiff's account on Twitter is wonderful to follow if you want to keep up with this stuff. And it's at T-I-F-Y, Tiffy, 330. So T-I-F-Y, 330. Follow her on Twitter. Okay, this has been a weird week, man. We've got Trump tapes coming out in which he's sort of like bumblingly going through classified documents. Like, everybody knows what he's doing here. Everybody knows he took the documents. Everybody knows he's supposed to give them back, and he didn't. Everyone knows, you know, he probably monetized these things, which is why he didn't give them back. But he's also such a braggart. I mean, he's with these people that are, like, writing a book about Mark Meadows. And as somebody who's ghostwritten a book before, I can't imagine a worse subject than Mark Meadows to write about. Oh my God. I hope they're getting well paid, except that they're so awful cackling in the background and making anti-Hillary jokes on this tape that I actually hope that that they're not well paid at this point. I hope the whole thing is a flop. Trump is ridiculous. We know he's ridiculous. It's hard to listen to the thing and know that it's not like some SNL sketch or somebody imitating him, but it's not. It's really him. He really is that dumb. And it's a disgrace. He's confessing to crimes. And I don't know what else to say at this point. I mean, if you still believe that this guy is innocent, yeah, I got a bridge to sell you. And that's not even the worst Trump thing that comes out. Miles Taylor, who wrote another book or is writing another book that's coming out about his time. He's a foreign policy guy that was in the Trump administration and one of the, you know, the normal guys in the administration who was, in there for the right reasons. Reports the story where Trump was talking about, you know, out loud about how he wants to bang Ivanka and how great her, you know, cleavage is and this. Distractingly to the point where the chief of staff, John Kelly, had to be like, sir, that's your daughter. You realize maybe we shouldn't be talking about this. And I know he's bad. I know we all make jokes about it. I know that there's the picture on Twitter that's floating around where she's sitting in his lap. You know, my friend Noel Castler has been talking about this for a long, long time on Twitter and every platform that he has about this weird attraction. We all know it, but it's still, man, he's the president of the United States and he has to be basically reprimanded by his chief of staff. Because he's talking about wanting to bang his daughter. I know, sometimes you just have to take a step back and really spell out what's happening here. The most powerful person on planet Earth had to be restrained by his chief of staff. Chief of staff runs basically the entire government because the president wouldn't stop talking about his sexual fantasies involving his daughter. I don't know what else to say, man. If you're still defending this guy, there is something wrong with you. Now, the problem is there's a lot of people still defending this guy. Why? I don't even want to know. Far be it from me to pretend to understand the MAGA cult, but they're out there. They're going to vote. Trump is going to run. This RFK shit is a little bit too dangerous for my liking. I wish this guy would just go away already. But he's going to be around for at least a couple more news cycles, apparently. So we really have to promote the Biden-Harris administration because these guys have done a fucking awesome job under really, really dire circumstances. They came into office in the middle of the pandemic. Nobody had the damn vaccine yet. Biden promised vaccines by April or May, whatever it was, which was sooner than anybody thought they could happen. And he delivered on that. He delivered on a lot of other things, too. He's managed NATO and the whole Ukraine situation beautifully, masterfully. He fucking handled that idiot McCarthy with the debt ceiling thing. I mean, the guy is good. The Republicans go from being like he's a senile old bat who can barely talk to he's a mastermind who runs the universe. And they can't, you know, the latter is closer to the truth. But I don't know if it's just fatigue or the media not reporting stuff, or I read an article that my friend sent me about deliverableness and how that whole idea of, hey, we're going to say we're going to do this and then we're going to do it and then we're going to announce it and everyone's going to be great and vote for us is actually not as effective as Democrats think, and that there might need to be kind of a rethink in how they campaign, you know, how the Democrats campaign. And it's actually better to be more emotional. And what people want and what's driving them to the ballot is women's rights under attack. You know, the Dobbs decision, Roe being overturned, all this fascist shit that's going on in Florida and Texas and Mississippi and the other red states. People don't like this and they're going to vote for it. But the Democrats have been very, very reluctant to make the election about that. So I think that the answer is to focus on that, have Kamala focus on that, and have her be kind of the attack dog, which is what the VP does anyway, generally in these election cycles. And, you know, they can promote all the awesome stuff they've done and also identify the villains and explain who they are and how they've screwed everything up. And I think that's a winning recipe. So Tiff has some great ideas, too, about, you know, what a second term would look like to set up Kamala for success in 2028. That's a little far down. I don't even know what's going to happen by 28, man. The asteroid might come. I don't know. it's hard for me to think that far ahead. I don't even know what I'm having for dinner tonight. And it's 6 o'clock. Okay. So sometimes my future planning is not so hot, but you know, Tiff had some great ideas towards the end of the pod, which are cool. Something I hadn't thought about before. So, and lots of other things too. So this is a great conversation. Again, her show is called The Rundown. It's on Wednesdays at 9:30 live on TikTok. And her TikTok channel is candidly_Tiff, T-I-F-F. One more thing before we get to the discussion here. Elon and Zuckerberg are going to be in a cage match, apparently. I don't know why anybody cares about this. My only question is, can this be on Mars? We'll be right back with Candidly Tiff.
Are you sick of same old boring vacation? Tired of renting house at beach? Why not go someplace new and exciting? Why not take family adventure to Belarus? Hi, I'm Yevgeny Prigozhin of Wagner Group. When I want to take break, even in middle of military coup, I always have charming holiday time in Belarus. Whether I'm in primeval forest of Bolovsyaskaya Pushka, Babrusk Fortress in Mogilev Oblast, or 10th floor walk up in downtown Minsk, where I am right now enjoying scenic view of brick wall, Belarus truly has it all. One more thing, women in Belarus are most beautiful in world. How beautiful are they? They are so beautiful, there is city named, and I not make this up, Brest. On subject of chicken, I might have been Putin's chef, but I'm your travel advisor. Belarus is best place on earth, better than where you are right now, and certainly better than that dump Moscow. Belarus, like Russia, but pretty. And now, back to the show.
Candidly Tiff, welcome back to Prevail.
Hello, how are you?
I'm not bad. I'm not bad. It's, as we discussed before the camera went on, it's very humid all of a sudden. And I'm in New York. You're down by DC, which is much worse, I know. How are you faring with the weather?
The weather is fine. It is summer. I keep forgetting we have transitioned from spring to summer, and that's always a weird thing because it never seems to like it never goes from like, you know, from cool to warm. It just is like warm. And yeah. Then it's like, oh, hey, by the way, it's summertime. So yes, it is summer in DC, which means it's hot, humid, and yeah, it's not a fun thing.
Now, when I was a boy, you know, we used to have four seasons instead of two. It was nice. It wasn't so bad, you know. Now I feel like everything jumps from, I think we had one day earlier this month where it was like 60 degrees on Saturday and 95 degrees on Sunday. And it was like, what just happened? I don't know. Yeah. Climate change, maybe? Who knows?
Yeah, it's very weird because last week it was cool. It was like around, I want to say like 60, and you had to wear a jacket or a hoodie. And then now it's like burning hot with humidity. So if you just never know what, I don't even look at the weather apps anymore. I just walk outside and I'm like, okay, I put a jacket on. And I'm like, no, it's too hot for this. Love, just go with the t-shirt. So I just can't keep up with weather. Maybe that's the result of climate change, right? And we just kind of got to go with the flow because you just never know what it's going to be on any given day.
It's true. That's we have to be adaptable. Now we started off talking about the weather, but I want you to come on because you know which way the wind's blowing, and I want to pick your brain on that. Last time you were on, I can't believe this. My podcast has been going for years now, which is a marvel to me. I had you on to discuss the 100 days of Biden Harris, which is like a million years ago. I feel like lots of stuff has happened since then, but you are much more plugged in with what's going on Capitol Hill, like all the intricacies of what Congress is up to and stuff like that than I am. So I wanted to have you on to really just get your thoughts on, you know, a lot of different things as we head into what next year is going to be, you know, yet another pivotal presidential election. So let's start here because we haven't talked about this yet. How did you react when you found out that Trump was going to be indicted for the second time, I should say?
Yeah, I was gonna say the first time it was actually on my, the first time he was indicted was my birthday, which was fun because I had told someone that I was like, you know, it was a lot of talk, like, this is going to happen. I'm like, oh my gosh, if this happens on my birthday, this is going to be so interesting. And sure enough, it was like 5 p.m., the day of my birthday, and they're like, Trump is indicted. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the best birthday present ever. So that was fun. We ended up on a Twitter space. It was a whole like party. So that was the first. But then the second one, I was actually kind of shocked, to be honest. I wasn't really sure what to make of it. You know, there was all this talk about what could happen, you know, what is Jack Smith gonna do? And I wasn't really sure what was gonna come about and what the charges were really going to be. I mean, if in retrospect, when they first went into Mar-a-Lago, you know, the FBI did say that they were searching And one of the things that they were looking for is if he violated the Espionage Act, right? So I think because it's been so long and there's been so many things that have happened, we kind of overlooked a lot of the things that they told us initially about what this case was about. And so when you actually hear it and see it, that it's actually happening, it's almost like, why didn't he just give back the records? He put himself in this position, but he's Trump, and this is what he does. He's kind of like the stupidest criminal, if you think about it. Like, you put yourself in this position. They asked for the records, and they gave him plenty of opportunities to give it back, and he still refused. And the fact that he keeps going on TV to talk about it,
probably not good.
Yeah, it makes it even worse because he keeps telling on himself. And I just look at the interviews and I'm like, oh my gosh, what is this guy doing? I'm sure Jack Smith probably looks at these interviews and the people on his legal team and go, what in the hell? He just can't stop talking. It's unbelievable. No.
I'm not a lawyer. You're not a lawyer, are you?
I'm not a lawyer.
We're not lawyers, so we can't give legal advice, but usually... I don't think it's a good idea to confess to your crimes on national TV. That's just maybe a guideline. I think probably a smart thing to do. But you mentioned him giving the documents back. Now, if you hit up a jewelry store and you take like necklaces and diamonds and stuff, and then you start to fence the things that you stole, and then the jewelry store says, hey, give me the stuff back and everything will be cool. You can't give back the stuff you already stole. I don't know what this has to do with Trump. I'm just merely saying.
I hear you, but this is the government, and they were willing to, they were willing to work with him and say, hey, guy, listen, I know you were the president. We're going to give you a little bit of leniency here. This is Nara talking. We want these documents back. I know you have them. Can we get them back? Okay, first time. Second, he gives some of the documents back. Then he doesn't give the rest of the documents back. Then they're like, okay, then they refer it to the DOJ to investigate. The DOJ even gives him some leeway and says, hey, can we get the documents back? He gives some back. The lawyers are involved. They're oh my God, they're so complicit too. It's insane. And then finally they're like, okay, well, we're gonna come into your home and we're gonna take it. And it looked like just reading back, like I said, reading back all of the things that the one guy who was in the Washington Post, I was reading back, D'Antonio, he is something else. So he told Congress that he didn't want the FBI to go in. And he was adamant about that because he didn't want to ruin, quote unquote, their reputation for going in. So it is like all of this kind of back and forth that's been happening. And when you think about it, you're like, you're more worried about the reputation of the FBI than actually wondering what Trump actually did with these documents, what documents were missing. And here we are, that was August of last year. And it is now June of this year. And he's been indicted.
I know. No, the purpose of the FBI is to go catch criminals. So if we have a criminal in the White House, maybe do that. And that is the thing that will burnish the tarnished reputation of the FBI. Tarnished because of Chris Wray, who's been terrible from day one. And, I've said from pretty much the gate, Trump fired Comey. I'm no fan of Comey either, but he fired Comey because Comey was investigating him and then replaced him with Chris Wray. So if you're like a criminal that the FBI is investigating, the FBI shouldn't then be run by the guy that you picked to take over the investigation. Just common sense here.
Yeah. And I think that's the part that gets me about this whole thing is the lack of common sense. There is just a lack of common sense on all ends. It's like, okay, the goal was for you to, the thing that Trump keeps saying is, these are my documents. He thinks he's the king, right? He's like, I took these documents. I was the president. He's telling Brett Behar from Fox, these were my documents. I owned them. I could declassify documents. Then he's like, yeah, but you had the conversation, at Bedminster and you said you couldn't declassify the documents. He's like, yeah, but he can't the common sense is not clicking to him that, yeah, you were not the president at the time when you were having that conversation. Therefore, you couldn't declassify it. And you probably shouldn't have had the document out or even referencing a document that you say doesn't exist. It's so absurd in so many ways, but he can't help himself and he's going to keep talking. And we'll see when we go to trial, because I really don't know. I think that's kind of like the conversation. When is the trial going to be? Is it going to be before the election? You know, obviously the primary for the Republicans is going to be sometime early next year. So is it going to be, you know, at the end of this year? I know they moved it to December 11th based on the filing that Jack mm-hmm. Smith had put in on Friday. But is that enough time? I don't know. There's a lot of conversation amongst, you know, many of us, like, when is this trial going to happen? My thought is it's going to happen before the end of the year. But I know the legal analysts think it could be delayed further. It's definitely not going to be before December. It could be either way. It could either be before December. I said it's his Christmas surprise. He's gonna he'll get convicted like right before Christmas.
Yeah, it's not gonna take long.
Yeah, it's not gonna take long. It's probably be like a 10-day trial because I mean they have all the evidence. But yeah. Will it be before the end of the year? Who knows? Will it be before the Iowa caucuses? I don't know. That would be interesting to see how that plays out politically, but they haven't even set a date for that. So I don't know what to make of it, but I just want it to be done already because we still have 1-6 to have to kind of parse through and figure and Georgia, right? We still have Georgia waiting to see what Fannie Willis is going to do with her case.
And we don't know this is not the last of the documents either. I think Jack Smith has more stuff up his sleeve. I think they did this because this is the easiest thing that they could do. That's the most cut and dry, you know, but I guess, you know, we'll see how it goes. As for Trump, I mean, this is now he's well into his eighth decade of talking his way out of shit and not getting in trouble. So he's going to keep doing what brought him there. Everyone talks about how old Joe Biden is. Trump is 2 years younger than Biden and clearly mentally not where Biden is, but we'll talk about Biden later. But that's my take on that. Now, you brought up the Iowa and all of this. And the thing that's fascinating to me is Trump is definitely going to run for president, you know, no matter what happens. You can run for president in prison. Eugene Debs did it in the 1910s, right? It's happened before. It's your constitutional right as an American citizen to run for prison. Trump needs to run, I think, to keep the grift going, because this is how he continues to bilk his marks that keep sending him money. The question is, will he be the Republican nominee or will he run third party? I think that's the question, because he's not running. I think there's zero reality in which he's not running. So what do you think about, you think he's going to get the nomination? Like, what do you think is going to happen?
Oh, he's definitely going to get the nomination. He will be on house arrest and running for president on Zoom. You know what I mean? This is Trump. I mean, he's never, people keep saying, do you think that he's going to get a, you know, take a deal, like he's going to, you know, plead guilt? And no, this is Trump. He's never going to admit his guilt in anything because he believes that he is innocent and he did nothing wrong. So that, I think that is out of the equation.
Okay.
As far as him running, he's most definitely going to continue to run. A poll came out today, NBC poll. I mean, he's like, I think it was like 60% or something versus he's going to sweep the field. I mean, people still like these Republicans, the MAGA Republicans still love Trump, and everyone else running is running from a position where they don't have the clout nor the experience that Trump has. I mean, DeSantis is probably the next closest person, and he's like trailing by like 30 points. I mean, he's like super behind, and himself, oh my gosh, he is so like so weird. That's like probably not even the right word to use, because it's like even beyond awkward. The way that he talks and the way that he acts. And I don't think he doesn't have the charisma. I've always said it. He doesn't have the charisma. Trump, we all know that he is like a total ass, but he has charisma.
He does.
And he has that New York thing where he plays upon people's emotions. Yeah. And DeSantis doesn't have that. And the rest of the field doesn't even come close to having that. So those people will vote for him even if he's on house arrest. I promise you, they have no, they also lack common sense because they don't yeah. care. They're just like, he's our guy and none of these people are good enough and we're going to vote for him. And if he wins, he wins. If he doesn't, oh well.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of the reporting that you see in the papers, it sort of says, well, you know, we polled Republicans and they said this. But I think a lot of like mainstream non-MAGA Republicans have left the party and are independents now anyway. So I think the Republican Party is, by and large, Trump-controlled MAGA weird, you know, crazy shit. The time they had many moments when they could have pulled away. I think the first impeachment, Pence could have taken over. They would have had like 9 months during the pandemic to, like, you know, actually present Pence as a viable option. They chose not to. There was a moment when they could have rallied around Liz Cheney. They could have jettisoned Trump, rallied around her. Liz Cheney, with the backing of the Republican Party running against Biden, is really, really dangerous from the Democrats' point of view, because you've got, like, you know, a Gen X woman who's, as we saw in the J6 hearings, really, really good, you know, in front of people and oozes common sense, regardless of what we think of her policies, which right. and the fact that, you know, her father is Satan. But, you know, she has that. But they fucked that up. They didn't do it. They, you know, they made it so that, no, we have to. She's not even the person in Wyoming anymore. You know, they threw her out right. of the party.
They threw her out the party. She is not even anywhere near what people think of Republicans these days, right? They think of people like Jim Jordan. They think of people like Trump. I mean, these are the people, McCarthy, who is so crazy himself with all his MTG, the Boberts. These are the people that represent. Yeah, these are the people that represent that party. It's not Liz Cheney, even like you said, her dad, who is literally Satan, but and will shoot you with a gun, you know,
right in the face, and then have you apologize. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, these people were this was the party, but this is no longer who we are. So I am happy that Democrats and even Joe Biden identifies them as who they are. They are the MAGA Republicans. These are not your run-of-the-mill Republicans. And as you said, most of those people have left the party, are like on the fence of the party. They're kind of just out there by themselves. And those people are very few. I mean, the Never Trumpers are never, the Never Trumpers are never going away. They're hoping for a new day that likely will not come for many, many years to come. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of stuck in limbo, and they sometimes revert back. You see them like on Twitter, like revert back to kind of their thinking of Republicanism, but it's not there. They're almost like houseless and homeless. They don't have anywhere to go. Right. So they're kind of just like, they're floating in politics. And we're just looking at them like, okay, you know, you have to like pick a side at some point, but they don't know what side to pick. Like they'll praise Biden. They'll trash Trump. But then they're also like, yeah, but we still want to be fiscal hawks, or you know, like it's just odd. It's just an odd place to be.
Yeah. No. Well, there's no, you know, the way that the country is set up, the architecture of the U.S. government is designed to have two parties, two functional parties. And right now we don't. We have one functional party and one circus show. That's what we have. There are a bunch of fucking fascists, and fascists are not good at governing anything. They're just good at having tantrums and getting people killed. You know, basically that's all that fascists do. So we do need to have a reset where either the Republican Party or some alternative, whether it's, you know, everybody joins the Democrats and the Democratic Party splits in half, and those are the two parties. We need to have two parties. And it's, you know, part of the problem we're having now is that we don't. And, you know, from all sides. Now, let's say something weird happens and Trump, I don't know, is convicted and is in jail and or flees the country. You know, he's just like, I'm out. I'm going to go to jail. The next thing you know, if you need me, I'll be in Abu Dhabi. And then we never see him again. Is there anybody in this field of losers that frightens you a little bit running in a general election of the people that we've seen?
Well, of course, DeSantis, even though he's weird, he is still the next. He is still right behind Trump, right? Not close, but he's behind mm-hmm. him. his policies are horrific. So yes, any chance that he could be president is always scary in any way, shape, or form. What he's doing in Florida is just horrible. Yeah. He runs on culture wars, and he's just not a good person. So to even think, and the thing is, he's actually smarter than Trump, but he lacks that common sense or even like understanding people. That yeah. Trump actually has in the charisma, right? Because Trump knows how to play on people's emotions. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that DeSantis has that skill to be able to do that. And I think, in fact, he actually doesn't like people. So it's even kind of a weirder situation. But people will flock to him if there is no Trump. They may even flock to Pence, right? Which is so odd in itself, because I mean, Trump tried to have him killed, but yeah. He is still an evangelical, right? And a lot of those voters are even, I mean, that's why he was picked to be the VP, is right. because right. of that evangelical vote. So, and I don't know that DeSantis really has the same appeal to those people as a Pence would. And the other people that are running, I mean, Tim Scott and Nikki Haley and the Vivek guy and Asa, like all these people are just, I feel like they're all running to be VP, right? They're all trying to get their name out there. Yeah. Hey, pick me. I can bring somebody to the table. But I honestly don't know who Tim Scott brings to the table other than a very small percentage of Black conservatives that he thinks he's going to make appeal to this party. And he does have some evangelicals that do like him, just based on the fact that he loves to talk about God, which is so odd in itself. You're running for president. There's a separation of church and state, but oh, whatever. This is so strange in every way. And listen, it is what it is. I just can't see, like I said, if Trump runs away, first of all, Trump running away in itself is kind of hilarious, just thinking about, but I don't know if there's the only other person that I think that actually would have an impact on this field, but people probably don't even respect him anymore if he got into this race, would be Mitt Romney. But no one respects him enough to vote for him. And MAGA pretty much has wrote him off. So I don't really know where MAGA even goes at if there's no Trump. Do they get his son to run? I mean, like, this is crazy. This is how crazy MAGA is, right? You have to think about what would appeal to them is running. Is if Trump says, okay, if Trump leaves and now his son decides to run, do they flock to him? I mean, he's still a part of them. It's just one of those things where you just don't really understand. I don't really understand that electorate in so many ways because they're it's a cult. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a cult, right? So the cult leader leaves, and the cult, unless Trump says, well, yeah, vote for Pence, or and he's not going to do that. He won't say vote for DeSantis because he hates DeSantis too.
Yep.
So who does he put on a pedestal to say, is it like Marjorie Taylor Greene, like, hey guys, she's running, now vote for her? Like,
who, Carrie Lake?
Yeah, Carrie Lake. Oh my gosh. Yeah, these are the people that he has, and who we know that he can control their minds and who they vote for, but who would he actually say vote for them instead of me? Or is it just a zero-sum game? It's me or Biden.
Yeah, I think it's that. Unless you can vote for people that are maybe dead, because I heard JFK Jr. would be, you know, pretty good. I think he's that whole thing is so baffling to me, because like, if JFK Jr., even if he were still alive, he would not be voting for Trump. I mean, in any reality, you know,
his cousin, uncle, whatever he is, I know his family member, JFK, RFK Jr.
Cousins, yeah.
Cousins, right? Yeah, he's out there. I mean, honestly, I was shocked that he was even running as a Democrat. I was like, when I heard it, I was like, oh, he's running as a Republican? Interesting. No, he's running as a Democrat. And today he has a video of him like lifting weights. He's like total anti-vax. It's just, that whole thing is just interesting. And then the JFK Jr. thing, remember when they were waiting on the bridge for him to come? Like, yep. These people are crazy. Like, this is what I'm saying. They're such a strange electorate that you don't really even know what appeals to them. unless you're in the cult. And none of us are in the cult. So we are just on the outside looking in, wondering what the hell are they going to do if Trump even, you know, has to go on how I think he's going on house arrest. I don't think he's ever going to an actual prison if he is convicted. So,
yeah, yeah. No, I think, you know, and I've been telling people this, I think historically speaking, incumbents don't lose unless they really suck or something weird happens. And Biden has been awesome. So unless he's, as long as he's, I've said this a lot, I'm lighting a candle. As long as he's alive and reasonably sentient, he's winning, and he's winning, I think, easily. But, you know, knock wood. But that's my take on it. Okay, this is a good time to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Handedly Tiff.
If you're on a GLP-1, you're probably loving the results. But how do you feel? All of those side effects can take a toll. So now what? Get to GNC. We'll help with solutions to address those side effects and keep you going on your journey. GNC.
Hey there, Brenda.
It's Carol.
Exactly. So which leg are we operating on?
You mean arm?
It's all connected.
Asking the right question can greatly impact your future.
Are you sure you're an orthopedist?
Actually, I'm a Sagittarius.
Especially when it comes to your finances.
Do you have a question?
Are you a certified financial planner?
Yes, I'm a CFP professional.
CFP professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's gotta be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money. That'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing in the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.
Okay, we're back with Tiff. Before the break, we were talking about Trump. Now let's pivot into the Biden thing, because again, last time you were on, it was just 100 days in. Everything looked pretty great. People listening to this know what my take is on Biden at this point, which is that I think he's been the best president of my lifetime. What do you think now? It's been what, three years now? It's or two and a half, whatever. It's a long time. So you know, the track record is there. What are your thoughts? How do you think he's doing?
I think he's doing great. There's been some challenges. Thanks to Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, you know, just getting bills passed through the Senate. So it hasn't been an easy road. Build Back Better, you know, that failed. And so I think there was a lot of lessons learned over the last 2.5 years. You know, people want to judge him what he hasn't done, but never want to judge him on what he has done. And that bothers me. So if you hear people, you know, well, Biden hasn't done, you know, what he promised. This is kind of like the far left argument. He hasn't done what he said he was going to do. But when I look at it, I look at it from a different perspective, and I look at what he has done, right? So when I think about, you know, where we were, and I always say, close your eyes and think about what it was like, you know, when he came into office on that first day, where we, you know, we were still in a pandemic.
Yeah, we were home is where we were.
We were home. We were in a pandemic. Unemployment was, you know, surging still. We were trying to get out of, people didn't even have vaccines in arms at that point. I mean, there was like a very small amount of people that had vaccines in January of 2021. And we, you know, we had to figure out where to go from there. The economy was not great. And we had to kind of slow walk where we wanted to be. And we knew that if these policies were coming into play, you know, we did pass, you know, the obviously COVID relief, and we had to move on and get some bills passed, and we got ARP back. And I think that changed the trajectory of how people were, you know, were adapting to the realities of where we were at that time, right? We were able to get another check in hand. People got, the $1,400 check that they were able to use to kind of get their way out of it. We had the child tax credit, which helped so many people be able to kind of recover from where we were being out of work. I know a couple of my cousins were getting like $600. They had kids that helped them to kind of get back on their feet. I mean, when you think about these policies and what happened, ACA coverage, people were able to get, you know, coverage that may have been out of work. There was a lot that was able to be accomplished with that bill. And unemployment, we had to get people back to work. That was the goal, yeah. To get people back to work. So when you look at the unemployment rate, and it's now, you know, what is it now? 3.7% unemployment.
It's effectively right. Full employment. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've been back to full employment, you know, for almost a year now. We recovered those COVID jobs, and Biden has created, you know, 13.1 million jobs. I don't think anyone on that day when he was inaugurated thought we would be able to accomplish what we've accomplished to this point. And to his credit and to his economics team credit, we have really done a really good job of, you know, stabilizing our economy. Of course, people, like I said, they love to complain about what hasn't been done. But when I was thinking about it this morning, I look back at some of my tweets from a year ago, and gas was $5. Right?
Yeah.
I went and got gas yesterday. It was $3.35. So even though inflation was high at one point and things were really expensive, we know that it's now down 4.1%, right? So we have made progress. And to me, that is the mark of a successful presidency and a successful Congress. Have we made progress? Because at the end of the day, that is what we want. And if you're a progressive, you should want progress. And I've seen progress.
Yes. Wait, but the progressives in Congress don't seem to want that. They just like to complain and vote against bills that will help them. Like the debt ceiling thing, by the way, which again, the Republicans were trying to, they were, you know, they grabbed control of the plane and threatened to fly it into the fucking mountain
And, you know, Biden was able to make them not do that without giving them really anything, you know, masterclass in how to play those fuckers. And these so-called progressives are voting against it on the Democratic side. I can't believe it.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it either. It really pissed me off. I'm like, guys, we got like I said, a masterclass in how to deal with people who are disgruntled and trying to get attention. He took it out of the media. He did it behind the scenes. Props mm-hmm. to Shalonda Young, Steve Ricchetti for handling this with the sensitivity that it needed and the care that didn't allow for people who are marginalized, people who are in poverty, people who are using our social safety nets to not be harmed. And again, these people said, okay, we're not going to vote for it. And they and I love that they went on MSNBC and they each one of them went and justified their vote for why they didn't do it. Oh, because of, you know, SNAP. I'm like, okay, but you do realize that veterans now are able to get SNAP, right? That they weren't before. And you can justify it any way you want. But for me, I feel like, listen, you vote with your president and he made this deal. And you ride for him. So I just thought it was kind of foolish, especially those who are running for higher office to do so, to not vote for it, because those things come back to you in the end. They definitely do.
Yeah. Yeah. And whatever they're for, like, look, the debt ceiling thing is like the ogre on the bridge, you know? Whatever promises you want, your Green New Deal or whatever you want. And all the stuff they want is fine. It's great. But you're not going to get that unless you do these incremental steps. If the entire global economy collapses, guess what's never going to happen? The Green New Deal. Whatever it is that you want is never going to happen. If the debt ceiling thing, if we default on the debt and the US dollar is no longer the global reserve currency, we are fucked. China just won. You might as well just hand it over to China because we're over. And we came that close to doing it. And you barely even really, I don't think anybody really was even that concerned because, again, Biden is at the, you know, the helm of the ship here with that. And also abroad where, you know, fucking Trump spent 4 years trying to break NATO apart. NATO, which is, I think, very, very important and responsible for the Pax Americana that we in the West have enjoyed since 1945, for the most part, in Europe, in Western Europe and elsewhere. You know, Trump's trying to destroy that. I mean, and Biden, as soon as Putin does the bullshit in Ukraine, Biden puts it back together again in 2 weeks, stronger than ever.
Yeah. So, yeah. From a geopolitical perspective, we try to understand like our own domestic policies. But when you see the importance of the geopolitical scheme of it all, if our economy collapses, we screw everybody over.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that Biden was at the G7 while all of this was going on. It was kind of like the perfect backdrop of, you know, of showing power, like I'm here, but I'm leaving and I'm going back home to deal with this so that our economy does not crash. And here we are. And I made a deal and we saved everything. Or do people appreciate that? Many do not. And that really pisses me off because he handled it so well. And even when it was done, he was still had the grace, even though Republicans showed him zero, interrupted his trip to come out and just say, look, we made a deal. We did this for everyone. You know, even McCarthy, I worked with him and they were mad at, and people were mad at him for that. Like, what is he supposed to say? You know, is he going to get on TV and say F McCarthy? Like, that's not going to happen. Use common sense. Like I said, common sense is not common. It's really frustrating, but he did what he needed to do. His team did what they needed to do. And in the end, the show that McCarthy and the Republicans tried to create was basically, it became nothing, right? It was all for nothing at the end of the day. And they're going to try to do it again. They're going to try to keep it. And I think, I understand why people were saying, you know, we allowed them to try to, you know, take this hostage, you know, this whole thing. But this is politics. This is what happens in politics. It's been happening for years. It happened to Obama. You know, if we when Republicans are in charge, Democrats don't act like this. We don't hold the government hostage. We don't take the government and say, you know, if you don't do X, Y, Z, we're gonna shut down the government. That's not how we roll. But Republicans are, and they don't care. They act like they don't care if the government collapsed. We knew that this was all a game from the beginning. It was a matter of how it was just going to be played. And I think if we were looking at it from a game perspective, Biden won.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And what you mentioned about the, you know, Republicans playing this is a relatively new thing in the history of the country, you know, that comes from the 90s when Clinton was president and Gingrich and then McConnell doing this obstructionist bullshit. Even in the years leading up to the Civil War, the political parties compromised, you know, Compromise of 1848 and the Missouri Compromise. And always they would become two fisticuffs, but they would compromise at the end of the day. This is recent. It's dangerous. And this is why, you know, getting back to my point about there needs to be two functional parties in Washington or this cannot sustain itself. So, okay, enough about Biden, enough about Trump, enough about the dudes. We have to talk about Kamala now. who I think has always been kind of driving the progressive engine in this administration. So a couple of questions up front. Now, there was talk in 2016 during the whole process of who's going to do what, that Kamala should be the attorney general and not the vice president, which at the time made me furious. And I was like, no, that's a demotion from, you know, where she is. It's not ridiculous. Why don't you want to have her? Having now lived with Merrick Garland for all these years, I kind of wish that she could have done both. I mean, is that legal? I don't know. What? I don't know. What's your take? We're lucky we have her where she is, right?
Absolutely. No, she is actually in the right place. I hated that conversation so much. I'm with you. If they wanted her, I mean, people wanted her to be, you know, the Secretary of State. They wanted her to be the AG. They were giving every job but the one that she actually earned and the one that she has, which was beyond frustrating. But I think overall, she's done a really good job of one, making Biden, okay, first of all, we said we're going to wait to the end. Biden is old. Let's be honest, right? He's old.
Yeah.
He's old. He's a white man. He is from a totally different generation than she is, right? So having someone who is a Black / Indian woman in that office, first woman of color in that office, someone who's younger, who's she's Gen X. She has seen the world from a different perspective, and her, the fact that she came from the Senate, she was a prosecutor, was an AG, then became a senator. Her perspective on things are so much different than what his perspective is. I mean, he was in the Senate for so many years. He was a VP. So in that respect, I think, because he was a VP, he kind of understands what she's going through, where people are, you know, kind of diminishing the work that she's doing. But he has done the job, so he knows what that looks like. I think for her, it was really understanding the job, like what does this job really mean, and for us to do that too, right? Because we have looked at that job as something that's kind of like the background, right? Who saw Pence? I didn't see Pence. I couldn't tell you what Pence was doing any given day of the year. I had no idea. Biden, he would go on trips. We knew he was helping with, you know, the reset when we were going through the recession. He was helping to kind of negotiate things. He was there, but we weren't looking for Biden. Like, I don't remember ever looking for Biden. But somehow everyone is looking for Kamala Harris. What is Kamala doing? Where is Kamala? I guess she's become like the iconic Where is Waldo kind of, right?
Yeah.
And it's frustrating because no one else has had to go through that. But because she's a woman and because she's a Black woman, people are trying to figure out, you know, what is the role now of the VP, which I do find odd because no one ever did that before. But I think if you actually wanted to know what the VP was doing, you could actually find out because it's all over social media. But people just don't want to look for it. And they've kind of given her this weird role where she is supposed to be not necessarily the person who was in front of Biden, but they don't want her to be behind Biden either. It's kind of, which way do you want? We know she can't overshadow. She's not the president, right? So she cannot act like the president. She can't overshadow him. But we also, but they also are like, where is she? She's there. You just have to really go and find what she's doing, because she's doing a lot, right? I mean, this week alone, she has been everywhere. And I'm like excited about that. I'm like, guys, here she is. You keep asking, where's Kamala? She's right here. She was on Joy Reid. She had a really good article that came out in The Advocate, which was amazing. She did the CNN Juneteenth event. She had a rally yesterday. She had a rally on Friday. I mean, she has been doing a lot of stuff, and it is campaign. We're starting to get into the campaign, so people can't use that excuse anymore, because she's gonna be everywhere. But I just think that there was a different expectation that was set for her because she was a woman than anyone else. And of course, there is, you know, the misogynoir that comes into play, which is obviously because she's a woman, because she's a Black woman, there, you know, people are going to treat her much different. And I think that was hard for the Biden administration too, right? They didn't really know how to defend her in the public. They really didn't know how to defend her against the media, because there was a lot of media criticism too. And that's, and thankfully, you know, the K-Hive has always been here to kind of protect her. But it is what it is.
It's tricky, because the VP historically is a job that, you know, famously in the Constitution has no purpose. Nobody knows what it is. That job has no set duties. The only reason it exists is in case something happens to the president, technically. So each vice president sort of carves out a role for him or herself historically. And therefore, it's almost inherently a job where people are like, I don't know, where's the vice president? What's the vice president doing? We never see this guy. You know, Dick Cheney was always at an undisclosed location, whatever he was doing. And so marrying her to that is odd, because she's not like that. She is somebody that's out in public. She's front facing all the time. She's always at events and stuff like that. And she's driving a lot of the policy, I think. And, you know, not that Biden is some stick in the mud, but I think she does drive him, you know, farther to the progressive side of things, is my guess. But, you know, and then you marry the office itself, which is kind of like milquetoast and ho-hum, with the fact that the media, you know, she's a woman and she's a woman of color. And the media tends to, you know, treat people like that differently, because the media sucks. And it is complicated to defend. And I think it's important that we figure out really how to do it, because what's going to happen and what we're going to see in the campaign trail is she's going to be the person that gets attacked. The GOP have spent the last 4 or 5 years, as soon as she started to run in the primary in 15, 16, they started sharpening their knives with this. You know, working on ways to attack her, whether it's the Kamala is a cop, you know, bullshit or whatever else. There's lots of things that they've tried. And I think that there's going to be more of this. They're going to go back into the well for stuff like that heading into this season, because the reality is, as you said, Biden is old. He would be 80, I believe, when he begins his second term, which is by far the oldest that any second term president has been. Now, he's in very good health, but 80 is 80. So from an actuarial table standpoint, there is a very good likelihood that she will be president at some point in the next 6 years, right? If Biden wins again. So that's the attack line we're going to hear from the Republicans. A vote for Biden is a vote for President Harris. So how do we combat that?
Well,
how do we do it?
Well, we know that Nikki Haley has already started this attack. She has become the attack dog on Kamala Harris. Maybe because she's a woman, they've said, you know, hey, you go take that. She's also a woman. She's also a woman of color, even though sometimes she thinks that she's not, but she still is. And so the fact that she has brought this argument multiple times, I mean, she did it on Friday again. She keeps saying it. A vote for VP a vote for Biden is a vote for VP. I think the way that we combat this is say, Good. That is actually a great thing, right? And this is why, right? I mean, if Biden was to, God forbid, you know, die while in office, the person that is sitting right there with him, making every decision, as he says, the last person in the room with him to make decisions, that is the exact person that I want to be the president if he was to somehow, you know, pass away in office, right? If there is no one else, why would I want anyone else to take that role, right? I mean, that was the purpose of her, of him picking her at the moment that he picked her, because he felt that, one, they had a really good relationship. Two, she was a strong person who could handle the job. And three, mm-hmm. she, like I said, she has good policy ideas.
Yeah.
She has good. And the only thing that she was lacking at that point was the foreign policy chops to be able to kind of, you know, have those conversations. She had never done it. I mean, she was on a local level. She was on a state level. She was in the Senate, which she had traveled, and she had some interaction with foreign policy. But her being in that office of the vice president has given her that ability. I mean, if you listen to her speak, she says, I've met with over 100 world leaders in her time as the VP. I mean, she's traveled to Central America. She's traveled to Asia. She's traveled, you know, she has a really good relationship with the French president, right? She's been there a couple of times. Africa, she went there. I mean, that trip was amazing on so many levels. Mm-hmm. I think for her, and for even just her confidence, and, you know, kind of where the ancestors came from, that was a really pivotal moment, I think, in her vice presidency that people shouldn't take for granted, because that trip was really, you could see that it did something to her, and she came back as a totally different person. Most recently, she went to the Bahamas. So she's working on the Caribbean. I mean, there's a lot of things that she's doing that people really don't necessarily see, but it's shaping her to be the person that Biden, I think, saw when he picked her, to be that person that is going to take over. I put in a post a couple of weeks ago about the bridge, right? Biden said he was trying to be the bridge, and the bridge is for Kamala. So whether that is in, mm-hmm. whether that is in the next 6 years after they win in 2024, or if that is in 2028, when, if, and if, there's a big if she wants to run, right? People keep assuming that she is going to run in 2028, but she may say, you know what, guys, I've had enough of this. I am over this job and I am not going to run. Somebody else take over, and you guys go have a primary and fight it out. We don't know what she's going to do, right? I mean, 8 years of being a VP is a really hard job. It's not an easy job. And people
it's thankless. It's thankless.
Yes, yeah. It's absolutely thankless. So, I mean, we haven't had a VP run since Gore, right? I mean, we think about the last couple of people that are, I mean, we had Trump, we had Cheney didn't run.
Yeah. Well, Biden ran.
But he took a break. Remember, he took a break.
Yeah. So, no, you mean right after. Yeah. Right, no, after, it has been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it also tends sometimes not to do great, you know? Doesn't people get sick of the party or whatever? So, okay. So this is my prediction. I've said this before on the show. I'm going to tell you and see what you think of it. What I think is going to happen is I think Biden is going to run. I think Biden is going to win pretty easily, especially if Trump is on the ballot. I think it's going to be a Reagan over Mondale in 84 ass kicking. And I think that after about a year, maybe two, he's going to be like, you know what? I'm out. I'm retiring. And he's going to pass the car keys to Kamala, and he's going to go back to Delaware or wherever he goes and let her be president for 2 years. That's what I think is going to happen. And the reason why is because I think he wants to do that. I think deep down he wants to do it.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I have a similar take, but a little bit of a twist.
Okay.
Okay. So
okay.
I think, like you said, they're going to win in 2024 pretty easily. Yep. And although Biden will be president, I think he's going to let her lead. We have mm-hmm. never seen that before, right? We've never seen a president let a vice president lead. So I think what you're going to see is he's going take a little bit of a step back and allow her to be upfront. And he's doing it already, right? He's kind of, if you watch it, if you watch what he's doing it already. but it's going to be on a different level where she's going to start meeting with, like, making decisions, having where he is now. You're going to see her kind of be up in your face, and to the point where you're going to be sick of her, because you're going to be like, why is she, people are going to be like, she's the president. Like, they're going to be really annoyed that she's the president. But I think that is the only way people, in my opinion, because she's a woman, because she's a Black woman, woman of color, people need to be able to see her do the job. Let's be honest, Americans, like, their imagination is very small. So they have to be able to see her do the job in order to realize that she is the right person for it. Right now, they don't see her doing it because she's kind of playing that background. But I think even in this campaign alone, you're going to see her a lot more than you would Biden. We have to remember that, one, he's still president, and two, he's also, like, he has to lead, right? I mean, he still has to lead this country. So he can't be out all the time on the campaign trail. So she's going to be doing that.
Yeah, she's good at that.
Yeah, and she's really good at it. Yeah, I've seen her campaign. She's really good. She's really good. People dismiss that, but I think people need to see that too, right? To see her campaign, because they said she sucked in 2020. They said she sucked at campaigning, blah, blah. They're going to see
There was a pandemic in 2020, by the way.
Yeah, so people are going to see that. And I think that really is going to show the strength of VP and who she is as a person and the way that she leads and respects Biden. And I think that's what we need. I think especially for men, they can't necessarily, and some women too, they can't see her as VP because they've never seen it before. It's kind of like Obama. No one believed that we could have a Black president until we actually had one. They were like, oh snap, we actually have a Black president. This is awesome. And I think the same thing with her. Being that she is VP, we can see her do the job. And I think that is really the hardest part, is getting people to accept that a woman can be president, which a lot of people couldn't see for Hillary in 2016, amongst other things, because they just didn't like her based on her time, you know, when Bill was in office. So there was a lot of factors there. But I think with Kamala, the reason people don't like her is usually silly stuff. It's usually, you know, superficial, her laugh.
Her laugh. That's what my mom says. Yeah.
We don't see her. We don't know what she's doing. So, okay. So Biden will put her up front. We'll put her in serious positions where she's able to talk about policy, and you'll see the serious side of Kamala, not the joyful VP, you know, kind of laughing, having fun kind of vice president that we have now.
This is a really interesting idea, because he could, like, have her, if there was some important address to the nation, he could have her do it. He could have her do the State of the Union. You know, there's lots of things that he could do and send her as a surrogate. And I really like that idea. That's a really good idea. Okay.
Here's my thing with Biden. We got to remember, he was the VP to the first Black president, right? So
yes.
So yeah. And then he decided he was going to pick the first Black woman president, right? So he's kind of like sandwiched in there, but he loves first. I mean, he's just kind of the guy who, I mean, he has the first Black woman Supreme Court justice, right? So this is kind of his thing. And I do think that he has this respect thing for Kamala, where he wants her to succeed. And even yesterday, you know, when they were at the rally, you know, he said, you know, she's my running mate, guys. Like, this is my running mate. And he's kind of putting her on the same level as him. It's not a behind, it's not an in front. It's, we're on the same level and we are doing this together. And the respect factor that they give her by saying this is the Biden-Harris administration proves that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I always try to write it that way too. And whenever I write stuff, I try to always say it in that way, just to get people used to the idea. But I don't know though, because I don't know. Some people at the New York Times on the op-ed page seem to think that Biden should pick a new running mate. So I don't know. Gosh. Maybe they'll listen to the op-ed writers of the New York Times, who, oh my God, just so out of touch. What do you say when someone says something like that? We're like, we should pick somebody else to be VP. What's the response to that? Or just other than just block them?
Well,
I don't know.
Honestly, the blocking thing is probably the easiest thing to do, because you just know you're dealing with somebody who's like, is totally just out there. But I think the way to respond to that is to say, who would be better? Because if you think about the people that are out there that they usually try to pick, right? So they'll try to replace her with another woman. So they'll say like Gretchen Whitmer. And I'll say, well, Gretchen Whitmer is running Michigan. I mean, she's doing a great job there, but she doesn't have the foreign policy expertise that the VP has. Or they'll say somebody like a Pete Buttigieg. I'm like, okay, but you know that he's the transportation secretary. And he also lost to Biden in 2020. Like, what he dropped out the race. So anyone that they're picking, the other new one is, of course, they go to Gavin Newsom. And I think that's like, I think it's pretty, I'm like, Gavin Newsom needs to pass like a vetting process to even be considered, which I don't know that's going to happen if you know his history. So maybe that's probably not the right thing to do. So let's not go there. But I mean, again, people don't really understand other people's potential VPs like backgrounds. They just pick like picking out of a hat. They're like, yeah, let's pick. I mean, some people say Stacey Abrams. I'm like, okay, you do realize she lost Georgia, right? So where do you who are these people that you want to be VP? Because none of them are making any sense other than Kamala Harris.
Yeah, who's been doing the job really wonderfully for the last little while. Yeah, with Newsom, he seems like he's a great, you know, politician and be a great leader, but you know, the two words I have are Kimberly and Guilfoyle, and that's disqualifying for me. Sorry. I don't know. I think that it's just journalists who are bored and trying to just, you know, come up with, it's like with, you know, sports fans that write about like, you know, fake trade proposals and stuff like that in the NBA. They just, it's a slow news week. We'll just throw this out there. But I really do think that Biden wants her to be president and would do that. I think it would make him happy to do it on his way out. He'd be like, we have a woman president now, and I fucking did that.
Yeah, that is him. That is totally the Dark Brandon like mentality, right? Like he's like like you just see him just sitting there just in 2029, just sitting there at the inauguration, just this whole cheese smile, like I did this. Like, you know, I made this happen. And that's kind of what we want, right? We want there to be a succession process, right? This is the person that I wanted to be and I saw the future in. And we worked together for the last 8 years and we made this happen. And here we are. And I use the word continuity when talking about, you know, the Biden and VP, and even from 2020 to now to going into 2024, we want to continue with the policies and have the stability to continue to do what we've been doing. And VP being the president in 2028 would just be, again, continuity of what they have achieved from those 8 years that they would have been in office. Does everybody agree with me? Probably not. I'm sure there's going to be like a crazy primary in 2028. But I think when folks and I from the K-Hive, we have the conversation and we say, you know, what does 2028 look like? We know that there is going to be a primary, right? And she's going to have to run and she's going to have to win. But I think when I think of Gavin Newsom or even if Gretchen Whitmer were to get in or someone else, I'm like, do you know what fuels a VP? If you know about is competition. She may not look like she's competitive, but she is. And sometimes you need people to push you to be better, right?
Yeah.
And so having a competitive primary will only make her better. And everything that she's doing and going through with the media and how they treat her and how people treat her will only make her stronger to have to deal with that. Because in 2020, she never had run for president. She didn't know kind of what to expect, but she will know. She has been in the trenches fighting all this time, and it'll only make her a better candidate in 2028 if she does run.
Amen. And I think she will, because I think she's going to be president at that time. and she's going to run as an incumbent, which is always good. Okay, so now you have... you have a live TikTok show on Wednesdays at 9:30 Eastern time called The Rundown. Tell everybody a little bit about that.
All right. So The Rundown is a show that we do on Wednesdays where we run down all the news of the past week. So whatever was going on from that Thursday until that Wednesday, which sometimes there's news even that day, we will pick a few of the topics and break it down. So last week we talked about the sub that was, but we also talk about politics too, where we talk about, you know, whatever the issues are of what's going on. And so it's actually a pretty fun show. It's myself. If you follow on TikTok or on Twitter, Too Raw, Too Real, Shantizi, and Jose, Can You See? So we and Zach, and we have a really good time laughing, joking, but also talking about serious topics that are in politics and kind of just, you know, break it down, but from a realistic standpoint. And, you know, we're just talking, we're just having a good time analyzing what's going on. And so, yeah, tune in.
Okay, no, tune in. This is on your page, right? Which is Candidly_Tiff, or is it
Candidly underscore Tiff on TikTok. I usually post the link on Twitter so people can join. But yeah, we all are on there. And yeah, you can go to my page and you'll see me live and you can jump right in and listen.
Yeah, you're always a wealth of information. And you're also a really good Twitter follow because you know a lot of stuff. And you're also, you share stuff about your life and what's going on, which I think is always fun. And so it's not all wonky, you know what I mean? Like, it's good. You're a good Twitter follow. I recommend. For some reason, you know, since Elmo took over, there's lots of accounts that I don't see anymore. Thankfully, yours is still in my feed, which is good. So I'm grateful for that. Now that this is out there, Elmo will fuck it up, I'm sure.
But, of course, yeah, I love that you call him Elmo too, because I do too. People get so mad that I call him Elmo because they're like, Elmo is a good guy. You know, he's like a good kid. I'm like, yeah, but his name is still Elmo. I don't care what you call.
It's humiliating for him. I think he doesn't like being called that. Therefore, I'm going to continue to call him that. It's really that simple. It's just, you know, he trolls everybody all the time. I can call him Elmo if I want. That's what I say. So this has been fantastic. Thanks so much
the
for taking
the
time.
The Prevail theme song is by Matthew Fawcett. Zarina Zabriskie, Marie Kost, and Martha Acuna provided the introduction in Ukrainian, French, and Spanish, respectively. Voice talent is by Stephanie St. John, Tally Briggs, Michelle Cantor, and me. Thanks to Allison Gill, Molly Hawkey, Kenai Williams, and everyone else at MSW Media. Please subscribe to the Prevail Substack with updates every Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday. Your $5 monthly subscription funds the column and the podcast. Visit gregoliar.com to learn more. Thanks for listening. Drive safely. Don't forget to tip your server. And until next time, we shall prevail.
If you're on a GLP-1, you're probably loving the results. But how do you feel? All of those side effects can take a toll. So now what? Get to GNC. We'll help with solutions to address those side effects and keep you going on your journey. GNC.
Hey there, Brenda.
It's Carol.
Exactly.
So which leg are we operating on?
You mean arm?
It's all connected.
Asking the right question can greatly impact your future.
Are you sure you're an orthopedist?
Actually, I'm a Sagittarius.
Especially when it comes to your finances.
Do you have a question?
Are you a certified financial planner?
Yes, I'm a CFP professional.
CFP professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's gotta be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.